these chickens live just a stone's throw from Independence Avenue at a place called Jerusalem Farm. The five people who live in the former convent collect biodegradable garbage from the neighborhood and turn it into chicken feed and compost. They help lower-income people in the neighborhood fix up their houses, and they raise vegetables. The founder, Jessie Sheely, said she had no hesitation about...
Certainly been called to serve, and when we came here, it took, 30 seconds before we knew that this was where God was calling us to, was this building in this neighborhood, and it was a coming together of the Holy Spirit, that's what we say, but...
I'm Brian Ellison, in for Gina Kaufman, and today on Central Standard, we're looking at the role faith plays in developing in our metro. What, besides urban farming, draws people here, how their beliefs and their actions intersect, and what the impact of all that is. Joining us to talk about it are the Reverend Dr. Wallace Hartsfield II. He's pastor at Metropolitan Missionary Baptist Church. I've been in Kansas City's urban core, that church has, for 120 years. Good to have you here, Dr. Hartsfield.
Hello.
Glad you're here. And Evan Rosell, he's pastor of ministry leadership at Redeemer Fellowship, which is one of the newest arrivals to Midtown Kansas City. Been here since 2008. Evan, welcome to you.
Thank you very much, Brian.
And Andrew Johnson, he's the director of the Pilgrim Center of Kansas City, which provides community-oriented services in the Hyde Park and surrounding neighborhoods. But that's not really why he's here. It was a blog post he wrote back in June that got our attention and led us to look into this topic. So we're going to start with him. Welcome to you, Andrew.
Thanks for having me.
Glad you're here. So the title of that essay we read was Onward Christian Gentry. And you talked about growing up as an evangelical in the suburbs, but since you've moved into the city and gotten to know your neighbors and observed things, you've come to question some things about how some Christians, at least, approach living in the urban core. Talk a little bit about that essay you wrote.
Sure. A lot of what I sense of, there's so much energy in Kansas City, people wanting to move back into the city, live in the urban neighborhoods, and it's so exciting and great to see all this enthusiasm for it. But I started to hear these conversations among neighbors and friends who just got me thinking about how people who are moving back into the city from growing up in the suburbs or growing up out of town and moving back into a place that just a generation or two ago was really abandoned in a lot of ways by middle-class white families, what does that mean to all of a sudden have this group of young professionals, predominantly middle-class white individuals or families, moving back in kind of en masse? And just kind of picking up on this tension, and I think it's... there are racial and socioeconomic and political dynamics there that are at play. And so what I wanted to speak to was, I think part of the dynamic that's at play is this mindset that I knew that I had when I was growing environment, that I had the truth and that I was called to bring that with me where I went. And I think that there's part of that that's probably true of any Christian or any faith tradition, there's a belief system there, but how that plays out in your relationships with your neighbors and how that plays out in your daily life, I really saw some tension around what was going on. So I wrote to that and just wanted to say to my people who are from that evangelical background to say, look, we're moving back into a situation that we don't understand that has predominantly been black neighborhoods or abandoned by middle-class white families. And so there's a sensitivity and there's an awareness and a conversation that we have to have.
And that history is something you wrote about, that how it came to be that those neighborhoods were predominantly African-American and no longer had those white families in them in the first place. That dates back to the 50s and 60s, right?
Right. And I think there's an important local history that a lot of us missed in our education, and that is that white flight in the 50s and 60s wasn't this phenomenon that just happened for no reason. It was very orchestrated by developers and planners and real estate agents to get white families to move out of the urban neighborhoods, disinvest from them, and buy new homes and communities in the suburbs. And I see that same kind of thing happening now, just in reverse, where if we're not mindful and aware of some of those dynamics that moved people out of the city and that are now through developers and city planners who want to move people back into the city, we risk some of the same consequences of displacement, of racial tensions.
And the problem you were naming was gentrification, a word that a lot of people use, and I think maybe in some different ways. What do you mean by it, and what is it that you're afraid is happening?
You know, I think I've had some good conversations since I wrote that article, and on multiple sides of the issue, I think that word itself has become very problematic. People use it as a positive force to go in and clean up a neighborhood, you know, improve sidewalks, plant trees, fix rundown houses. I think there are other people who use it in a negative sense, that it is meant to drive out low-income minority individuals or families to make way for people who will then raise the property values. So I think there are elements of that at play, but I think the word itself, on the one hand, it's what I wrote about in that article because of this theology that some people believe in called gentrification with justice, where gentrification is very much a positive force and also part of what God is doing in the city. And I think just owning that so firmly is problematic to me. Not only saying gentrification be a positive force, but aligning it with what God's will is in the city.
Well, let's follow that argument, but take it to you, Reverend Wallace Hartsfield. Mm-hmm. Your pastor at Metropolitan Missionary Baptist, certainly hard to come up with any churches that have a deeper history of being in the urban core of Kansas City. It's primarily an African-American congregation. What has been the impact of the church as you see it, both your congregation and the church as a whole, the faith community, in these communities, these urban neighborhoods of Kansas City?
Well, the dynamic that is presently happening, where you have young white professionals mainly moving into the area, is beginning to and has been creating some tension. And that's because of the fact, with good reason, many blacks cast a suspicious eye on what actually is happening. We've heard the spiel about coming in the name of God and as a faith movement, and that has historically been a prelude to basically either a conquest or of sorts, or where essentially you have blacks who are displaced, dislocated, some kind of way we get the bad end of this. So there is a real suspicion with it. But I don't want to suggest that is the only thought, because I think some believe that the black community is a monolithic community. Everybody's thinking in exactly the same way. While there's suspicion, there's also this real desire to have community where blacks, whites, Hispanics, where we can truly have an integrated neighborhood where everyone is respected, where all voices and values get an opportunity to sit at the table. There's that group of persons that are there. And as it relates to specifically faith within the black community, you know, we don't separate, at least let me say for the majority of black churches, there's not a real separation between ministry, what the church does, and activism. That's because historically, the black church was born out of protest, seeking freedom, and seeking to accomplish that through justice itself. So whenever the black church gets together, it would be unusual for there not to be social issues being addressed, or letting persons know that there are some job openings here, or letting persons know about a health fair that's going to be happening, because the social well-being of of the person is connected with their spiritual well-being.
You know, the church has never really left the community. We're talking some about churches coming in or individuals coming in, but the African American church has never left. What do you make of the realities of poverty and crime that persist in the neighborhoods, even alongside the church, which never left?
Right. Well, I believe that many of the challenges, the issues, the problems. First of all, I believe that we as the Black community must own our part of that. There have been some decisions that we have made. There have been some apathetic moments that we have endured. But having said that, I would be remiss if I would suggest that this has been about bad decisions on the part of Blacks. Essentially, the neighborhoods that many predominantly Black churches remained in were neighborhoods, as has already been stated, have been systematically disinvested. They have been, resources have been taken from them. When you start talking about things like grocery stores, banks, hospitals, all of these things that have just now been taken from a community, it's result of systems.
Evan Rozelle, you're pastor of Redeemer Fellowship. Some folks may not even be familiar with what Redeemer Fellowship is or where it is. It's a church in the 30th neighborhood. What is it? What is its sort of philosophy? What brought you? You have another campus out in Overland Park, but what brought this church plant into the Midtown area?
Yeah, that's about a 150-year-old story, right?
Okay.
Because none of us jump into a story at its beginning, right? It's always being written as we're talking about a place like Kansas City. Our church is about 7.5 years old, and we were planted in June of 2008. And our primary desire as a church was to see Christ exalted, to see the gospel transform lives and see the gospel of Jesus Christ not just transform hearts, but a city, a people. And we thought, well, where does that happen? It happens in the heart and soul of a city. And despite the flight we've talked about, I think Midtown represents the cultural, the artistic, the economic, the even the governmental center and pulse of our Kansas City region, even as Kansas City has grown and, as some would argue, become like a donut. And we thought, well, how can we serve the city there?
So when you say I want to ask you to sort of clarify your language, that when you talk about Christ transforming lives, in what sense are you wanting to see lives transformed? Is that an inner spiritual transformation, or is it also some change outwardly in the circumstances of the community?
Yes.
Yes to both.
Yes. Yes. In other words, it's not a binary question. I think God comes chiefly to transform our hearts. And then as our hearts are transformed, as we see God as King, as we see and respond to the grace that He gives us, it has to pour out into who we are, into who I am as a dad, into who I am as a neighbor, into who I am in my professional world. We don't believe in this idea that you're a Christian on Sunday from 10 to 11, and then you're just a white person in Midtown, the rest of the week. No, actually, God comes to transform everything.
So what does that transformation look like from on sort of the outside measures? I mean, hearts transformed, but then beyond that, how does the city look different if Redeemer Fellowship is quote unquote successful at its job here?
It's a great question. And I should also say thanks for the context to have these conversations. We're having it within our community at Redeemer. But opportunities like this, I think, grow the city. So thanks, Brian. But I say what transformation looks like at the heart level ultimately asks, well, what's God's heart? What's God's heart for me? What's God's heart for my obedience to Him? What's God's heart for how I love my sons and my wife? And it's also what's God's heart for Kansas City. You know, I think sometimes.
But what is God's heart for Kansas City?
Yeah, God's heart for Kansas
City. What is it that you think Kansas City should look like again, outside of just internal spiritual factors, what should be different in the neighborhoods than it is today?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what we see is the engaging and transformation of culture in all of its aspects. So we see things like some of the ills of our city in the educational realm, right? In the racial segregation. You know, as Reverend Hartsfield said, our desire is to see Kansas City look a lot like heaven, in the sense that every tribe, every tongue, every nation, rich diversity, celebrating God for who he is. We hope that Kansas City becomes a more just place.
Evan, I don't want to put you in a position of trying to defend all predominantly white Christian churches in the metro area, but I do want to ask you, as you hear the concerns that Andrew raised in the blog post and that he summarized here about the effects, the negative effects of gentrification, the raising of property values in a way that drives some in the community, maybe more African Americans or people who are in a position of poverty, out of the neighborhoods, the very ones that perhaps outwardly one was trying to help.
Mm-hmm.
How do you respond when you hear that as you are a pastor to predominantly white, predominantly middle class people who are sort of moving into the city and where that may be an unintended consequence?
Yeah. There's an author that once described the church as is like a T-Rex, having a very big snarling mouth with very small ears. And although I don't agree with his sentiment completely, I think there are aspects of that are true in the sense that as Christians, we're called to humility. We're called to giving up our rights. We're called to listening to people across our entire city. So what does it look like to come forward sharing the desire that Reverend Hartsfield mentioned of a diverse and unified city, but also walking forward in that with humility, we call it awareness, social awareness, spiritual awareness, and not compromising the truths of the gospel, but asking ourselves, well, how is this person perceiving this? How is this person perceiving me? Am I articulating God's heart for the city here well?
And Andrew, as you hear that, you observe not specifically Evan's church members, but others. Is that what you see happening? Do you see that kind of engagement and listening and awareness, or do you see disengagement and lack of awareness?
I think what's interesting is it's both, and there is this tension. I know a number of people who go to Redeemer who are just great people who are so excited to be here. And I do want to say quickly, I do think Evan is selling himself a little bit short, because if you go to Westport in Maine and see the changes that have happened along that stretch of road, that has been directly because of Redeemer's great work of bringing in businesses and a coffee shop and taking vacant buildings or some distressed storefronts and really made them great. And so there, I feel like there is part of that is very positive. But I think on an individual basis, you have folks who are both coming in with this great heart and good intention of saying, I want to serve. I want to be a part of making positive change in my city. I want to, you know, live for Christ in these particular ways. But there's also this rub where if they don't also bring along a consciousness or an awareness of listening, of actively saying, I don't know. You know, I was just driving my son to work this morning, and I was kind of asking him, thinking through, I always look to him for the greatest quips of wisdom. and I was asking him, well, what's a good neighbor? What does it mean to live in a neighborhood? And he just kept saying, I don't know. And I was, you know, trying to goad him for something better when I realized, like, that actually is a great posture to take initially. I don't know. And I think I want to see more folks and encourage more folks to bring that, I think Evan said, humility, that awareness of saying there's something here before me and something else going on outside of my own knowledge.
So Wallace Hartsfield, as Evan talks about the mission of Redeemer Fellowship and what they're trying to accomplish, I would think that a lot of those words could be said of what you are trying to accomplish in your church: spiritual enlightenment, engagement with the community. But is there something different in how a church like Metropolitan Missionary Baptist is approaching those same goals from what Redeemer Fellowship is for better or for worse trying to do?
Yeah, I just think it's the way that we approach it. All right, I think for the most part we're on the same page. All right, but we would probably say something like, put some flesh on that. All right. When you talk about the heart of God, mm-hmm. you know, and then let's ask some of the very difficult questions. Who ultimately has the right to determine the heart of God? All right. Because at some point we are going to suggest that we understand what God is leading us to do. Who generally or ultimately makes that decision? Mm. Historically, what has happened is that their whites have had the privilege to be able to define not only reality, but to define the will of God, what God is saying to do at this particular point. You know, what God is doing in the city, my question or my concern would be, have some of the white congregations that have felt this burden to come in, have there been intentional talks with others in the black community, leaders and others, and asking the question, how can we do this together, mm-hmm. not come in with a program? Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely right.
Well, let's pick that up after a break. When Central Standard returns, we'll dig a little deeper, asking what can and should religious institutions, like those represented here at the table, do to change a community. What's the line between imperialism and improvement? We'll ask our guests also what motivated them personally to come or to come back to Kansas City. We want to hear from you, too. If you're a person of faith, how does that faith shape how you interact with your community? And if you aren't religious yourself, or if you are, what impact do you see religious people having in your neighborhood? Call us at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You can also write to us on Twitter. We're at KCURCST. I'm Brian Ellison. Stay with us. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Gina Kaufman. What would Jesus do if he was considering a move into urban Kansas City? Not such a crazy question for our guests today as we talk about the impact of faith and faith communities on neighborhoods in the metro. Wallace Hartsfield II is with Metropolitan Missionary Baptist Church. Evan Rosell is at Redeemer Fellowship. And Andrew Johnson is a blogger and community activist who's also director of the Pilgrim Center. To join our conversation, you can call us at 816-235-2888. Tell us the impact you see from people of faith around you or from your own presence, 816-235-2888. I want to talk with our guests, before we jump right back into that conversation, a little bit of about how they came to Kansas City and what they're doing now, working or living in Midtown or the urban core. Andrew Johnson, you grew up in the suburbs. Why did you move to Midtown in the first place?
Sure. I grew up in South Kansas City, went to college up in Liberty at William Jewell, and then right after that moved down to Midtown about 10 years ago to actually be part of a church community. And what's interesting from the experience of me and my wife, we ended up moving into a neighborhood where we realized 6 months, 9 months in that we were finding more what we were seeking in community amongst our neighbors than we were in this church that was, talking about community and purporting to be about community. And there are great people there. A ton of our friends are still there, but we, at this point, are unchurched, and we find a number of our friends in that same boat who grew up in the church and left, or are atheists or Buddhists or whomever, and just have found that that is where we end up having community and the most meaningful relationships, and also the ways that we see the most practical ways our neighborhoods and the people who live in them experience life and share life.
What are the ways that you think the community you're finding, in your case outside of the church, what are the ways that that community can, in fact, have an impact, can bring about transformation in these neighborhoods?
excuse me. I think what is helpful is, to be honest, when the church itself isn't the convener of those relationships, we end up, I feel, talking much more directly about what is happening on our streets, on our sidewalks. And the church can be helpful in guiding a lot of discussions, but I find sometimes that religious language ends up being a barrier sometimes, at least when talking about who's the person walking through our neighborhood and is that a neighbor or should we call the police? I think when you have a mindset of I'm here to clean up this neighborhood and do good in the name of God, that informs how you see that person much more than when you're talking to other neighbors who aren't also encouraging or enabling that kind of mindset, for example.
Yeah. Wallace Hartsfield, you were in Atlanta. You grew up here, but you were in Atlanta. You earned a doctorate at Emory. You could be doing well in academia right now, but you've come back to Kansas City to be a pastor. What brought you back?
My father just hounded me.
He left you with no choice.
That's one thing. But on a serious note, Metropolitan invested a lot in me. And just as they've invested in so many other children, which is not something that is unusual within the context of the Black church. And when I say invest, I'm speaking about the fact that I not only did I have my natural mother and father, but I had 10 sets of godparents. Mm-hmm. All right. And then the whole idea of persons really encouraging, and when it came time for schooling, we did not necessarily have the money, but the church congregation, like we do for so many kids, just kind of rallied around trying to help us to go to school on an every year basis. And the fact that they really helped me to get to a point where I was able to do a doctorate. Really, I was really trying to do that because I felt my father was trying to live vicariously through me because he desired to do that. He did not have the opportunity to do that.
Right. He was a pastor for 40 years at the same church.
Right, yeah. Right. And so even though my father was really pressing me, and the whole notion of pastoring is not really what I totally feel called to do always in my career in ministry, I really did feel a sense of commitment and something that I owed to this church.
Right. Yeah, that multi-generational piece is part of what is a hallmark of your church tradition.
Right? Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Evan Rozelle, you also have come into this work in a roundabout way. You were an attorney before before taking on this ministry role. What have you sort of sacrificed? What sort of lifestyle change have you had to make to be doing this work in the city? And what? How does that affect the impact you think it can have?
Sure. Yeah, you're right. I kind of backed into this parking spot, so to speak. This was not the trajectory coming out of high school or college. My wife and I were married in 2008, and we moved to Kansas City to work as attorneys. So I worked for a judge for a few years, and then after that for a firm downtown for a few years. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It was fun. We did a lot of trial work, and so the ups and the downs of trial life was really engaging to me. But as we moved here in 2008, we got plugged in with this church in Westport. And I remember we were there, incidentally, the first day that this church launched in June 2008. And I saw blue hair on one side of the aisle and blue hair on the other side of the aisle, right? We'd see blue hair of the old person variety and then blue hair of the Westport variety. And I thought, what is this place? Like, what is this place? And so we were captured by the mission of the church and God's grace for us. And I think, as we talked about transformation earlier, God, over a period of years, captured my heart. Every Christian lives under the lordship of Christ, whether you're an attorney or whether you're a cobbler or whether you are a chef or whether you're a pastor. All of us live under the lordship of Christ. And so he began to stir affections in me to take a different role within the church.
Right before the break, Wallace Hartsfield talked about ways that he thinks churches could be working together at this point, the kinds of conversations they could have. As you were sort of in on the ground floor of this work at Redeemer, what steps did you, as a brand new church in Midtown, take, or what are you still taking to make sure you're not sort of going it alone, not coming in as a bunch of white people into neighborhoods that are not all white, trying to do good things and save the city.
With Superman capes on.
Right. Yeah. What do you do to reach out? How do you make those connections?
Yeah, I think there are very practical things, but I think it starts from a very spiritual foundation. That is who we are, our spiritual nature, and how apart from Christ we are.
But what are the practical things? That's what I'm asking you. I mean, because as Wallace Hartsfield said, you know, it's about putting some flesh on that heart.
It is, but it's very much about the root, too.
Well, I think we've heard you on that. Okay. But I'm asking you, what practically has the church done?
Yeah. So one of the things we've done as we planted in 2008, our pastors who planted, there were three original founding pastors, would take numerous trips to Kansas City just to hear from people. What is God doing here? What does a church look like here that serves this city? What does it look like to come in with your hands open, not your hands clenched? What does it look like to come in as listeners, as learners, as those who actually care about and love this city, not as people who are armed with trying to take it over? So that's been the posture, and that's informed by a broader theological position that underpins that, our spiritual reality. And I think going forward, then, some of the things we've done, you know, the first person we hired, aside from those three founding pastors, was a director of community development. Basically, someone who is charged with and passionate for building relationships in the city. And from that, over the last 7 years, a number of practical things have resulted, you know, both things that we talk about corporately as a church, and then also the things that our people are doing as they go about their lives as Christians in the city.
Wallace Hartsfield, your church has a commitment to confronting systemic justice as well as to providing charity. How do those two things go hand in hand? You're both talking about the issues you mentioned earlier, systemic issues, but you're also handing out food from a food pantry.
Well, we have to do both of them. There's not a choice here. There's great need immediately that must be addressed. All right. The problem with it is that one can become inundated with meeting immediate needs and never get to the point of dealing with justice. Mm-hmm. That for mm-hmm. me is the way I differentiate charity and justice. Charity is about meeting the immediate need. Justice is about addressing the issues that have caused or created the issues in the first place. So it's one thing to feed people in a soup kitchen, help with utility bills, help to provide clothes. But at some point, we need to ask the question and address those systems that keep people hungry, that keep people naked, and so forth.
816-235-2888 is the number to call if you want to join the conversation about the impact of faith and faith communities on our neighborhoods, 235-2888. And let's take a call from Jordan in Kansas City, Missouri. Jordan, welcome to Central Standard.
Yes, thank you for having me. While I was listening, I live here at Jerusalem Farm in the Northeast, and I had the privilege
of... We heard some of your chickens at the top of the hour, Jordan.
Yes. I had the privilege of listening to Reverend Wallace speak at Cherith Brook, another Catholic worker, I believe, and he mentioned the three P's, power, profit, and privilege, that we as white people have in society. And so that has stuck with us in our community, in the way that we view our neighbors and our lives and our role in community of trying to reduce power, profit, and privilege in our lives and giving those up in a downward mobilization. And then Catholic social teaching also comes to mind, of teaching others about human dignity and learning about that ourselves, and the rights of workers and dignity of work. So I think it's important, as Reverend Wallace says, to put a lot of flesh and listening to our faith and listening to the struggles of others, and trying to reduce in our lives and lift up in the lives of others that struggle. I don't know. I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, and I really appreciate you doing so, Jordan. Thanks so much. You know, Jordan appreciates things that he's heard you share, Wallace. I'm curious, as you listen to it, as someone who is also living in this urban environment, Andrew, do you feel that the weight of of power, privilege, and profit, as Jordan said, quoting Reverend Hartsfield?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think especially when you place it in the historical context of Kansas City and listening to both men speak, I'm just seeing this tension around when you have an urban community that over the last half century has been abandoned and disinvested by the predominantly white culture, and the churches that have remained there have had to deal with hunger. And as Reverend just said, when you're dealing with hunger so much, it's hard to then get to that next step. And I think on the end of that extreme is the privilege of beginning with spirituality, which is a lot of what Evan has shared. And I think the ability to synthesize those two is so essential right now, because the folks in the urban neighborhoods who have been here for a while would love to get to that point of working on heart issues. But I think that requires those of us who have power and privilege to lay down some of that and recognize sometimes hunger just has to come first before the heart.
Well, we'll see if we can find ways to bring those together after a break. When Central Standard comes back, we'll talk more about that and take some of your calls as well. Is charity needed? Is justice needed? Or both? And how do you do both together? I'm Brian Ellison. Stay with us. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Gina Kaufman. We're talking today about the impact of faith and faith communities on neighborhoods in the metro. Wallace Hartsfield of Metropolitan Missionary Baptist Church, Evan Rozelle of Redeemer Fellowship, and Andrew Johnson, who works with the Pilgrim Center and has written about Christian gentrification, a word that we've been exploring a little bit this morning. They're all with us, and we hope you will be too by calling 816-235-2888. Let's go right to a call from Joe in Midtown. Joe, thanks for waiting. Welcome to Central Standard.
Oh, good morning. One of the things that I'd like to mention is that I'm great support of what Reverend Hartsfield has been saying. And there are some examples that we can find. And for an example, there is a church, it's a Mormon church, in the area of 30th and Brooklyn, a beautiful, beautiful building. But I don't think there's any investment in the church other than the beautiful building and this maintenance that does anything for the African-American community or anybody living in that community. And so I would agree with him that there is much suspicion about white congregations moving, back into the African-American community with, the flag that God has sent us, help you, and so forth and so on. Those are my comments.
Really appreciate your call, Joe. Thanks so much. Let's talk to Eric in Midtown, Kansas City. Eric, welcome to Central Standard.
Hey, how you all doing?
Great.
I just had a question for both pastors. I wanted to ask them, does white supremacy exist in Christianity in North America? If it does, what are both preachers doing to dismantle the underpinnings to white supremacy in their teachings in Christianity?
Eric, that's a great direct question. Appreciate your calling in. Thanks. Let's start with you, Evan Rozelle. You are white. You serve a predominantly white congregation. Does white supremacy exist in Christianity in North America and in Christian ministry?
Yeah, I think there are deep, deep lines of racism, racial disunity that exist within the church. At times, sometimes the church has been the one promulgating that under the banner of the Bible. And at other times, the church is kind of wearing those bruises. And so to answer his question, yes. I mean, we can't be a church in Kansas City and not think about and be burdened for the issue of racism, and as that's reflective of our national posture. I think that's been one of the burdens for us as pastors, both as white pastors and black pastors, within our own body at Redeemer, to help our people think about the issue of racism. And he's talked about power and privilege and profit. Oftentimes, white people are ignorant to these things. Obviously, sometimes there's an intentionality, right? Sometimes there's an intentional racism, but sometimes it's latent and it's not even perceived. And so one of our chief jobs as pastors is to help people see that. We do that a number of ways, by investing in our staff and bringing black community leaders to talk to our staff, to hosting, last year, a race series lecture with several of the black faith leaders and community leaders at Redeemer, where it's a chance for us to listen, to walk through books like Tanner Colby's Some of My Best Friends Are Black, as a church together, led by our pastor, saying, well, how do I apply, you know, he's got a chapter on residential issues, and we've got a table of 80 people talking about that. And so I think what our burden is to yes, preach the gospel and also create some contexts where that truth can transform people and very much so transform the way we think about race.
Eric, the caller, addressed it to both pastors. And Wallace Hartsfield, how do you address the question of white privilege and white supremacy in the Christian church in your predominantly African-American congregation?
Well, that has been one of the very difficult challenges for blacks who embrace Christianity, because in the one sense, on the one hand, Christianity has provided a vehicle, a way to address the marginalization of blacks because of the fact we can identify with Jesus, who is the lowly one, but takes notice of those who are not within the inner circle, but mm-hmm. rather live on the margins. Mm-hmm. So we see the possibilities, and that's the reason why African slaves were able to make use of this religious tradition, because they saw it as a possibility for liberation. Unfortunately, that same religious tradition has been utilized also by whites in a very supremacist way, and has led to some awful things. As a matter of fact, has made it possible for oppression of blacks to take place. I think the caller also asked, what is it that we do about that? What are we doing in our ministries? Well, every table that I sit at anymore, I'm not interested in really talking about another program. I'm really not, because I really don't have any faith in that. We need to talk about conciliation, and I don't even mean reconciliation. We like to talk about racial reconciliation, but you can't talk about a reconciliation if there's never been a conciliation. Hmm. And if we really want to start talking about white churches moving back into the neighborhood, into predominantly black neighborhoods, the real question is I've heard about laying down resources and different things like that. It's not about giving up rights or anything like that. It's about sharing. Hmm. It's mm-hmm. about sharing. And
that's right.
And conciliation can only take place when there's a balance that happens when you respect me as a human being. All right. I mean, as a full human being. Mm-hmm. And so respect, even if we don't agree, you still need to respect me just like I need to respect you. And then we need to value living together righteously. Mm-hmm. Let's rescue righteousness from theology, and let's talk about righteousness for real. Right relationships.
Because I think what he's hitting on is a key issue, is that it's not whether churches should work together for the racial unity and the spiritual flourishing of the city. It's how. How do we do that? How do we provide context like this conversation here, where we can engage one another and sharpen one another so that Kansas City becomes a better place?
We are really short on time, which I'm sorry about. But in the short time we have left, I wonder if maybe the question can come back to where we started. There's a possible problem with well-meaning, mostly white, mostly Christian people of faith coming into the city and thinking they can fix it. They can make it better just by being here. What's one very brief word that each of you would give to people who are thinking about doing that? Something they need to keep in mind to really have a positive impact when they come into the city. Let me start with you, Andrew Johnson.
I'm going to make it two words.
Two words.
Slow down. Mm. Slow down.
And you can even use a few more words.
Okay.
Ten more.
Take your time and evaluate why you're coming here and where you're doing it, who you're doing it with, and listen to voices that you wouldn't otherwise listen to before jumping in.
Great. Evan Rozelle with Redeemer Fellowship.
Yeah, I think the posture that we take as living as Christians in Midtown is the same posture we take as living as Christians in Johnson County or Northland or Southeast Jackson County. That is walking with a posture of humility and grace and truth.
And Wallace Hartsfield, pastor of Metropolitan Missionary Baptist Church.
Give integration a real chance. Mm-hmm. And there's no way we can fix this if we keep talking about white churches and black mm-hmm. churches.
Mm-hmm. What a great conversation. Amen. Thank you all so much for being here today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for the conversation. You.